Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Pixels, a podcast for the discerning gamer. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Pixels. This is a podcast where we talk about the video gaming news from all over the industry, usually. My name is Patrick Beja. That's not usually, it's all the time. But today we have a very different episode. Just like every year, we're at BlizzCon, and we're going to be doing this show all about BlizzCon, everything that was announced, everything we saw, everything we tried. So hopefully, if you're a Blizzard fan, you're going to enjoy it. If you're not, come back next time, I suppose. As I said, my name is Patrick Beja, and we have a bunch of people around the podcasting table. We're doing this live, and I guess I'm going to start by introducing everyone. First, well, everyone's going to introduce themselves. It's going to be easier. But first, someone you might have heard about.
Oh, hi, I'm Scott Johnson from the Instance Podcast, which I also do with Patrick, as well as Core for Heroes of the Storm and The Exploding Tire for Overwatch. Thank you for having me.
Well, you insisted. So also with me is someone that you've heard on the show many times. He's on Pixels almost like at least once a month, basically. How are you doing, Ed?
I'm doing well. Hey, Patrick. Hey, everyone else. I'm from 4Player Podcast, and this is my second BlizzCon, and I'm really excited to be here.
Excellent. I keep bringing the mic closer to his mouth.
Really close.
And we're sharing. So what I'm trying to do essentially is get closer to him.
And it's going
to
be very sensual.
Just got married, though, so it's risky. Yeah. All right. On the other side of the table, we have...
My name's Rob, and I run...
Closer.
I run a podcast called Omnic Lab, and I also do a second one about Hearthstone called Velen's Chosen. And Omnic Lab is a strategic Overwatch podcast.
Excellent. Andres?
I am Andres. I'm also part of the Omnic Lab with Rob. We talk all about strategy and geek out over everything Overwatch.
Excellent. And the most beautiful smile in BlizzCon... I'm
good. Which one? They're both good. I'm going to take it as me. Is that okay? Yeah, good. My name is Taliesin.
And I'm Evertel.
And we are Taliesin and Evertel. Don't do it at the same time. That's weird. And we run a YouTube channel called Taliesin and Evertel, a WoW-centric Warcraft news channel.
Can I say WoW and humor?
Yeah, I mean, you can say it.
All right, cool. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, no, I mean, I was going to say, if you think that's humorous, then thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
If you think that's humorous, then we're going to be fine. We're going to be friends.
All right, so first of all, thank you all for coming to this little recording. It's the end of the second day. I am personally absolutely exhausted, so I don't know how this is going to go. And anyone can start talking whenever, just interrupt each other, it's going to be fine. Who was here already before? Who has done more than one BlizzCon? Oh, is it your first?
It's our first, yeah.
Okay, it's your first as well.
Yeah, we're newbies as well.
Okay, so how was it for you guys, maybe Taliesin and Evertel start. Get really close to the mic.
Terrifying and exciting. It's that kind of thing where it's really easy for us because everything we do is the most exciting thing that's ever happened to us. So we get a badge and we go, oh my God, look, we've got a badge. And it says our names on and it lets us in the building. And then they give us a bag to go with the badge. And we're like, it's a bag for the bag. And it's got stickers on it and all sorts. And so, yeah, and everything that happens, every corridor we walk down, every screen we look at, every computer that's all shiny and stuff, it's just incredible. So we're very easy to please. Even like spending $7 on a beer, we're really happy to do. We're like,
sorry, $7 on a beer, $11 on a wine. Yeah. As we learned the hard way.
So we had six of those, and loved every minute of it. We said, $11 for a wine, this is fantastic, this is the best weekend ever. So yeah, that's what we've been doing.
You guys?
Oh, it's been surreal so far. Coming to BlizzCon has been one of my dreams since I was like 14 years old playing Warcraft 3.
Oh my God, I feel old.
And but finally, we were able to make it happen with Omnic Lab this year. And not only that, but coming with media passes and stuff. So it's our first BlizzCon, and we were a ball of nerves coming over here because we didn't know what to expect. We're like, oh man, I hope we just get to enjoy the stuff and also meet with the people. All that stuff. So I know Rob has a similar feeling.
And you came from Japan, Rob. So that was a trip.
Yeah, hopefully the jet lag is not speaking too much. But yeah, this is very surreal for me. Like, not just to be at BlizzCon, but to get a media badge very last minute. And second to meet both Patrick and Scott, people that I've listened to in the car. I won't tell you when. I told Scott before this so that he feels old off air. But yeah, I definitely, it's very weird. Like, I've been around since Town Crier days and just loved AIE. I even joined it a couple years ago, but I didn't even start podcasting until after grad school because I've just been so busy. And then I was really nervous for our show right after it started taking off a little bit when I moved to Japan. I was very scared that I wasn't going to be able to do it anymore. And basically, you just sleep less and it happens. So I was pretty excited that happens. But yes, BlizzCon itself is both fantastic, exhausting, exciting, and a ball of anxiety the first time. But I feel like it's eased a lot because of our community that we have in our Discord has also joined a lot of us. We had some admins, some mods help us out, and they've been very supportive.
Yeah, everyone is amazing here. Just everyone is amazing here. Yeah. Everyone we've met.
It's really, I mean, for us, we've done it a bunch of times. Ed, how many BlizzCons is it for you?
This is my second. So I was here last year, and it was the tenth BlizzCon. It was super cool or whatever, but there wasn't like any really huge announcements other than Sombra. And so this year, coming back to have the huge announcement of the new expansion, was just completely unparalleled to anything else, any other conference I've been to or anything like that. I don't get the cool orange badge yet, but
I'm not sure if we're allowed
to talk to you. I had things to strive for. So,
so yeah, for us, it's been a few, Scott, and I have to say this. I mean, BlizzCon is always a special moment because basically what you guys have been talking about, it's a moment to meet your communities and hang out with people who are like you. Like, in real life, you go to the store or you go to your job and you talk to people who don't necessarily know what, an enhancement shaman is. And you're here and you talk about these things and everyone is like, oh, yeah, of course, yeah, I do this and I do that. And everyone knows it. So you're really with your people. And Blizzard, I feel, is sort of capitalizing on that. I don't know if you noticed. I mean, of course you noticed, but the initial video, which was they opened the opening ceremony, which was like super Apple-like, and like it was a branding thing where it was like, we're all nice people. We all love each other. Like, it's like our family moment, like outside of our family. And the incredible thing is that it's actually true, at least at BlizzCon.
It's true, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've been, this is what, my sixth, I think. You've been, what, two more than that? Three more than
probably,
that? Yeah. It feels like yesterday that I had my first. So listening to you guys talk is freaky, because I remember this feeling of like, ah, this is nuts. And this year is even more nuts, because they've expanded, it's bigger, it's so much more than it used to be. But, yeah, like that community aspect is a real thing. It's the entire fuel of everything I do. The fact that we got to do a live stage show this year, Patrick and I, for the instance, was a big deal in lots of ways. But it was like this culmination of years and years and years and years of talking to community, working with our community, building a fan base, and having, you know, a genuine extended family. And then Blizzard this year decided to give us an outlet for that. And that was great because we get to really talk to the people who are kind of tip of the spear and maybe like us the most. And they all came out in force and we had standing room only kind of situation happening with a lot of it. And that was a really heartening thing to see. So it's fun to go back to 2011 and think about what it was for us and what it has become at this point.
It's like 27.
Yeah, 20. Yeah, right.
Well, 2007.
Seven for you.
First, yeah,
that was your first one. Mine was 2011. But the idea that this thing just keeps growing is not shocking because Blizzard keeps growing. But it's a monster now. Like, it's just crazy. And the fact that they made a point in not only keynote conversations from people from stage, but also that video you just talked about, and just generally speaking, the community aspect this year is at an all-time high. So had you guys been here back in 2011, you would have seen less of that. And I think Blizzard has just grown to embrace it. And it starts, you know, there's podcasts and YouTubers and streamers, and it's not just them, but they know that they are so connected to the player base that by helping us communicate with them better, they're just bringing in more players, making
and that
those
kind
people
of thing
excited.
I would have expected. Like, I would have expected to have creative people around doing their thing. And I mean, it's not like Blizzard did you guys a favor by having the instance on, because we couldn't get near that. And the queues around the block. And I don't know if you've seen, but I've got, you know, an orange badge. I'm legit. Okay, you know, it's not a big deal. So we couldn't get anywhere near that. And that I expected from BlizzCon, and seeing amazing screens and people doing their thing and talking about Elemental Shaman. No one talks about Elemental Shaman, but yeah, you know.
That's my roots, man.
I can't talk to you either. No, it's, I expected that, but what I didn't expect, and what Evie and I have been talking about, which was the most surprising thing, was the kindness. There's just kindness everywhere.
Yeah, it's been such a surreal experience coming in and having people just being so generous, like with their time and with their badges. So we met this little girl yesterday who was like 8 years old, and she was admiring like my badges on my back, and I was admiring hers, and I'm like, hey, I love that well played badge, and she literally just like tore it off and handed it to me, and it was like the perfect little moment of like kindness. And of course I was like, no, take my amazing diva badge.
You were like too vehemently.
No, okay, thanks. But but it was so lovely, and it was so sweet, and we've just, I think that's been the most overwhelming thing, and like even a little bit like emotionally, because we, you know, people come up and they say hi, and they're so just lovely and supportive, and it doesn't feel like anyone is kind of like stepping on anyone's toes. Like it's like the more we make, the more that it's just better, you know, like no one is trying to like surpass anyone or do anything like that. And it's been such an incredible feeling.
It's weird because Blizzard manages to combine, find the balance between being that incredibly successful billion-dollar company and also preserving that authenticity, because it all comes from the authenticity of the company and the devs, which they're here to make money. No one is, you know, has any illusions, but it feels incredibly authentic in their love for their craft and for the community. So
I mean, could you guys speak to being veteran, like not just veteran like goers to the event, but also just people in general that are media and like viewing BlizzCon from a completely different lens than the typical consumer, what the evolution of the event has become over time? Because you guys have seen this from Diablo, Warcraft, Starcraft, and then Hearthstone comes in, and then Overwatch, and then you hear the stories like what Titan has from the main stage is just super emotional for people that have been here since the beginning.
Well, I mean, for me personally, since I spent a few years at the company, it's been like a complete weird trip. And the first time I came, I was invited by them. And this time, actually, I usually don't accept the invites, but this time, you know, going on stage, I wasn't going to say no. But at the beginning, it was like two halls in the convention center, and now they have four halls plus the extra new hall. Like, it's the consistency of the quality of the products that they've been putting out that is allowing them, and the, you know, I keep saying authenticity. I think that's really a key factor as well. They keep proving to their fan base, even though, you know, you have people on forums who get angry and who, but at least here in the epicenter of their community, they keep proving that they can do this and that they know how to do things. And they're, you know, Scott was saying it a little bit. It's a juggernaut now. It wasn't like this before. It was like something that was kind of manageable. Now I can't even imagine the amount of work that goes into it.
Well, not only that, like it's a scale thing. So Patrick's right.
Thank you.
I think it's a rare moment. Write this down. Patrick was right. But this idea that they could consistently make video games over the last 20 years that are fun, innovative, quality up to their own quality standards, polished to all get out, their alphas are better than most released games, like that kind of stuff, that's already a major feat in this industry that the rest of the industry seems to struggle with. Not everyone, but it's usually smaller studios that still kind of have the culture that lets them take their time or have standards that they want to reach. But more and more bigger publishers with larger games are stumbling, while Blizzard continues to not stumble every time they do anything new. I mean, we've talked about this a million times, Patrick, but from the ashes of Titan came Overwatch. And the ashes of Titan was expensive ashes. It was $150 million in like 6 years of development down the toilet. Just gone. And they said, nope, it's not right. We're not feeling it. We can't do it. And whatever other factors went into that. But to see them say, all right, well, what did we make? Can we take what we made and can we do something with that? And they made a $2 billion revenue shooter. A shooter Blizzard made. That is the most popular thing right now ever. 2016 was the year of Overwatch, and I don't see it slowing now. Mm-hmm. And the way they're supporting it is obviously helping that. But that $150 million is like money I left in the couch now.
Well, that's the difference, isn't it, I guess? And it's that thing of, if it had been a different company, that wouldn't have been $150 million down the toilet. We would have got Titan, and it would have been rubbish.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I think one thing that that they talked about on the Instance panel was that, like,
those guys.
that, like, Chris Metzen, like, brought Craig Robinson, right? Chris Robinson, under, like, his tutelage, and you said that you've heard from a bunch of people that was something that Chris did all the time. And I think that that kind of culture of, like, the upper-level executives are not above, like, just, like, saying, hey, you're new, let me come hang out with me, let me show you kind of the ropes and show you how these things are. That kind of stuff filters down into a company that allows like 20 years of development to turn into basically turn out the same kind of games that they've been developing for years.
I have a follow-up on that. So right before I got here, Metzen arrived. He showed up at BlizzCon, which is a little scary. He used to have bodyguards, so it tells you, you know, kind of how you have to be careful. But he's pretty incognito, and he said, hey, we're down such and such place. Come meet us. So we went down to meet him and talk to him for a minute, see their kids. And he's wearing a hat that if he holds it low enough and his beard's crazy enough right now that you really can't tell who it is walking around, which is good. But I told him this. I said, this is what Chris said on stage, and this is what we seem to hear this from a lot of people that come on the show or that we talk to in general, that you and others like you would not lower yourselves, but you would always see the new guy come in and go, all right, let's give him the vision too. Let's have him feel what we feel about these characters, about these worlds, about this process, about these values, so that we leave them with the same feelings we have. And he said he says, we didn't always do it consciously, but he says, that's it. He says, that's how I could retire. And then a year and a half later, tune into the virtual ticket, see that cinematic, and know that his creations are in good hands. Outside, if you don't do that, you don't build the legacy. There is no legacy if you keep all that to yourself. And by that, I don't just mean his talent or his thoughts or his stories, but I mean his willingness to pass it down so that a whole new generation of 20-something developers can come in and be caretakers of that stuff in a way that we all respond to positively. I mean, I don't know what the magic is, but they killed it with this last expansion. They're killing it with their other games. It's
insane. I mean, you see this with the cycling of the Apple leadership, like, for sure. Because, like, you got Tim Cook taking over from Steve Jobs, and there's a very clear visionary difference.
I don't know that it's. I mean, there's an idealization of Steve, but that's a different.
But you've got that constant figure of Morheim.
Yeah, well, I think Morheim has a lot to do with it. Like, he is the one that, you know, gives the direction, and there's a lot of him, I think, in the company. And you were talking about the missteps with, well, the big misstep with Titan, but talking to that trust that the community has for the company, even when they do mess up with a game like Diablo 3, which I loved and played like, I don't know, 150 hours before Reaper of Souls even came out, you know that they're going to stick with it and they're going to make good on it. So that plays a lot into the trust that the community puts into them.
And that's just a small misstep. That was a fixable misstep, and they showed really quickly that they could fix that. In the case of Titan, they couldn't find the way to do it, but stopping it flat out, saying we're not doing it anymore, taking the hit, taking the loss in the face of shareholders now and all kinds of repercussions when you do something like that, they did that to maintain that same trust. Like, if they would have launched that thing broken, like you were saying, we wouldn't have liked it. The trust was broken. Where do you go from there? And then we never know if Blizzard's going to do that again, right?
I'm not sure I'd have had that commitment. I get upset if I render a video and it takes an hour and there's something wrong with it and I have to do it again. I'm like, do you know what?
Yeah,
I could just say I'm really proud of this and I can put it out. This is the best video we've ever... I think you're going to like this. We tried something a bit different with this one. I think you're going to like it. And for that much development and that much money and that much... You know how much the people put into that game.
I think your mic is really low.
Oh.
I don't know if... Do you know which one it is? Turn it up a little bit. This is live podcasting, people.
Is
live.
Is this any better? How's that? Any better? Like this?
A little bit better. Yeah.
We're literally right in front of it. We could not get any closer.
We're doing
that's a bit too much.
John
all right,
Paul.
So, I mean, bottom line, we love Blizzard. We think they give us reasons for loving them. But let's move on to, unless you wanted to add something.
No. It's funny that you mentioned Apple and it came up a little bit with like the ad and everything and the kind of the company direction. It's funny because when I see an ad for Apple, and oh yeah, I guess this means our Apple sponsorship is gone now. But when I see an ad for Apple, it, I feel like I'm being peddled a product, and that goes for most things in the world. When I see something like that for Warcraft with people talking about family and community and all of these kind of like buzzwords, which float around quite a lot, like I believe it. And it's that authenticity is so real, and I don't get that like anywhere else, like in your job, in your life. Like, it's crazy.
I was walking the floor earlier, and there was Ian Hazekostas, who's helming World of Warcraft now. He was just hanging out, signing like things for people, and he was in the middle of the crowd. And I don't think we would see that from many. I mean, maybe in gaming it's a little bit more intimate, but it's rare. I think it's a rare quality.
Dishing out Pepe Velcro badges like they were sweets as well. He's like he's like the most cerebral Santa Claus you've ever seen. It's a beautiful thing.
I would say that the a good comparison between the video that they showed and would be with the Bethesda E3 conference this year. Bethesda did the exact same thing where they showed like the little kids and talked about how their dad works for a video game company. But I think the difference was that it was less like let's film our kids and have them talk about us, and more just like talking about the entire community of Blizzard games that they've created and what it feels like to be working for a company that has fostered and created that community and turned it into such a great thing.
Speaking to that, in the opening ceremony, right after the video, when and you might help me out here, what is the name of Reinhardt's voice actor?
Darren DePaul.
He comes out, and like he's just a voice actor for the game, but you can tell that the company has influenced him quite a bit, and the audience that he's had has had a great impact of his life. You could see him kind of get a little bit teary-eyed in the thing, and he was getting very emotional.
He's the sweetest person. Like, should I tell the story?
Tell the story!
We were coming out of the press room, and he was in front of there, like, shaking hands, and I was like, oh my god, it's Darren DePaul! Like, and I come up to him, just want to shake his hand, and I go like, oh, I just want to shake your hand, and he goes like, I know that voice. And he's like, oh, I listened to the instance. And like, he was taking the time to speak with everyone. And like, not just us, but like literally everyone. He was getting stopped every 2 meters. And I think that kind of, again, authenticity, I think that we keep coming back to that word, is found. I mean, I'm sure there are good and bad people in that company, like in every, but at least their love for games is most of the time very authentic.
It's noticeable. You can tell it comes through.
All right. Anyway, so we just spent half an hour being total Blizzard fanboys. But I think it's important for people who don't have that connection to BlizzCon to understand why this thing is what it is, because no other company has anything like this. There used to be some things roughly equivalent, and you might have like TwitchCon and other things like that, but it's not quite the same thing around one company. But all right. Let's keep gushing. I do want to talk about the cinematic for World of Warcraft. I don't know if we're going to get to talk about everything in the end because we're already running long, but the cinematic for World of Warcraft, when that came out in the opening ceremony, I hope that everyone listening has seen it, and because we're going to spoil it entirely. Basically, for me, there was that moment where I'm an Alliance player, and there was the moment where Sylvanas, of course, you know, jumps up and goes full banshee and has the banshee wail, and like, and she yells for the horde, and you can see like the entire room, which is basically 15,000 people, going like raw. And as an Alliance player, I was like, I wanted to scream for the horde, and I was like, no, all right, this is okay. This is okay. This is cool.
Well, that's good of you, Patrick.
Yeah. And but I was really hoping that we would get this, the equivalent for the Alliance, and I didn't know how they were going to achieve that. And that moment with Anduin and with the facial animation, it's like chills. And they didn't only managed to do as well, but they topped for me that Sylvanas moment, and the face of Anduin, that because you have the history with the character, you know who he is and his father dying and the legacy and the fact he doesn't like war, but he's doing it anyway because that's what you have to do and he's the king, and like it was incredible. I don't know if you have.
Yeah, I mean, it was just genuinely good filmmaking, wasn't it? It's that thing that if you just described what was essentially happening in that cinematic to someone who doesn't know what's going on, okay, we know that Lordaeron is really significant and really cool, and we know who those characters are, but essentially that is just two armies fighting each other. And it's chock full of Easter eggs and cool stuff, like when you say Sylvanas hits Bloodlust and the Horde, you know, they get their haste and they go for it, and it's great. But even then, the humanity that they put into that moment with Anduin, and his, we got a great comment on our video about it, which described Anduin perfectly as a cross between Meet Joe Black and Legend of the Fall, which is just Brad Pitt. Both of those things. a cross of both those Brad Pitts? That's amazing. But it's true. And the humanity that comes through that. That render, I guess, is the word. I don't know. I'm not sure.
I think what's really so important about that moment was his dad was basically like training him to be like a warrior, just like his dad was for years and years and years. And he decides to use what he's good at, which is his priest abilities. And so he throws the sword down on the ground, not like saying, I don't think I should be this warrior king, but just like I need a moment to regain my composure. And then that's when he looks up into the sky and calls down the holy light and creates that crazy powered barrier, which goes way farther than any powered barrier I've ever seen.
That makes him officially a disciplined priest, you know.
Yeah.
And what with the new Overwatch character also being a disciplined priest, light and shadow. But I don't want to alarm any Alliance, you know, fanboys here, but he also did a mass res in combat. He has got a hacking ban coming his way. Like, we're not going to see Anduin for quite a while.
I saw some really funny troll tweets going out after that moment. There was like, I think it was Hearthstone or somebody that's a big Hearthstone fan is like, casting Circle of Healing, zero mana. It wasn't that cool.
And the Horde just didn't focus the healer. It's their own fault. Anduin pops all of his cooldowns, and they leave into it. They're like, you rush him.
So go watch that video if you haven't. And if you have any history with World of Warcraft, you're going to be, like, amazed. All right, so the expansion was announced. Battle for Azeroth. They sort of set aside the Void Lord stuff for a little bit, apparently, and are going
like four times.
They what?
They dropped Old Gods as a term like four times. So I'm still under the belief that we're going to be fighting Azoth at the very end, especially since we're fighting Queen Ashara first.
Sure, but not the Void Lords, right? Yeah. It doesn't go that far. But there's a bunch of new features. I don't even know that I'm going to run through all of them. Maybe you guys can tell us which features from the expansion you are excited about the most?
Yeah. I just want to get out of the way before we start gushing about all the amazing features. Is Battle for Azeroth the worst title for an expansion
ever? Oh, I love it.
Ever?
What?
Really? Okay, no, this is great. This is good because I think it sounds like a bad patch.
Yeah,
me.
I don't think it's all that inspired. It's just a little bit on the... I don't want to say boring. I love the idea that we're back in this faction scrum. It feels great. But Battle for Azeroth sounds like a code name for a product you're working on, and you're not sure yet what your title is.
Put it this way. After the launch, and, you know, this is our first time at an expansion reveal, and we're super excited and want to do everything, and you know. But even then, Evertel and I took it in turns for about 2 hours afterwards to forget what it was actually called. This is like the game that we actually make our living playing, and we were here and we saw it, and we a number of times. You still don't remember
something. No. We were like, is it Champions of Azeroth? War of Azeroth, right? It does have that like kind of like generic feeling, and like you say, it is almost like a code name for what you would eventually.
You guys are crazy.
I get the double meaning. I get
it.
We get that they're fighting each other now, and later on they'll be fighting to save for Azeroth.
It's more than just they're fighting each other. It's like Teldrassil was burned down. Lordaeron is in ruins, in more ruins than it was. It's like I think it explains exactly what this is. They're battling for the supremacy of their world. So I like it, but you know, I'm a fanboy.
I like the whole concept of the expansion,
and it informs everything about the expansion. Like we have the island expeditions where you're going to be going to explore randomized events islands where you're going to be competing with another party from the other faction. You're going to have the War Fronts, which is basically a world PvP type thing. Not quite world PvP, but they're revamping the PvP tag on
the
servers.
War Fronts are like world RTS PvP.
I guess, yeah.
Which no one quite understands them. And in our dev interview yesterday, I don't think they quite understand them yet. But I, the idea is fantastic. And no one knows how long these games are going to take or what exactly they're going to involve and how first person it's going to be and, you know, how RTS style it's going
to
be.
Just to explain very quickly, those are going to be you on the ground playing the role of one unit from an RTS game, essentially. So you gather resources, you build buildings, you choose which ones you have to build, and then you go attack the fort or whatever. But at the same time, the opposing faction is doing the same thing, defending. Or so there's this PvEvP aspect of it, which could be really interesting.
Yeah, it could be fascinating. I mean, the idea that Warcraft got away from the RTS aspects when WoW launched was understandable, but kind of a bummer. Like the idea that we were all looking forward to back in 2004 was, oh, we'll be able to take Warcraft into this new place and I can be down there in the scrum. The problem is the actual application for gameplay and systems isn't exactly one-to-one, and it can't be, and it's good that it isn't, so we've got this whole other thing. And for years we've languished in, will Blizzard ever figure out a way to bring RTS back to it? And they had rumblings a few years ago. Greg Street, I think it was, maybe on our show, said we've been working on like a MOBA style PvP type game mode, a battleground, but we don't know when it's going to happen, and it's probably happening, but we don't know. I feel like this might be that the eventuality of that, and by that I mean, you know, you're not creating units to just stand there till you tell them where to go. They're creeps. They you build a structure. If it generates units, they're now being generated and they're off to fight. MOBA style, which works for me. So if they can take what we know about MOBAs and inject that in a way that's fun and interesting, great. But I just think on the ground, behind the back, collecting resources, making buildings is not the same tactile experience that an overworld sort of way of doing that is. So I think it's a risk. I'm super glad they're taking it. I hope it works. I just wonder if in a year we'll look back and go, it doesn't quite translate. You know what I'm saying? Like, it doesn't quite work any more than I think. If I was a character on the ground in Heroes of the Storm, I don't think I'd enjoy that as much as the way I enjoy it now. Like, there's something about the perspective of these games. Like, what is Diablo? Diablo is a lot of things, but what it isn't is a first-person shooter. That would be weird. Now, I understand that maybe we could make something out of that, but it's Diablo.
That's called Destiny.
Destiny. You're right. So all of that being said, I guess I'm glad to see them pushing something that seems a little risky, will not overall hurt the expansion, but will definitely help it if it's rad.
And that's the kind of risk they have to take, surely, at this stage. The worry is that it becomes like a curio or a novelty, which is never fully explored in the way. There's no doubt that it's coming from a really good place and it's full of love. Like the building setup is purposely ripped directly from Warcraft 3. You know, they're using the same buildings in the same order and things like that. And it's just a worry that it's going to be more of an homage than an actual viable kind of gameplay.
But that's kind of how Warcraft works, right? It's like an iterative game. They plant things into the game, which in the next expansion becomes slightly better or is just scrapped completely. It's like the same thing with the island quests that they're adding into the
expeditions.
Yeah, the expeditions where you have these islands, you have three people, you get on them, you gather resources, you maybe go up against AI, like really smart AI NPCs, advanced AI. And that is something that I'm just kind of trying to wrap my head around a little bit, like how that would work. Like, how do you do AI in an MMO? Like, is that...
Well, apparently when you start a boss, they send a rogue to sap your priest, and then it runs away, and you're effed.
Do you know what that reminds me of? That's got like hints of Shadow of War and the kind of the Nemesis system. They were talking loads in the deep dive yesterday about how... You know, they want these advanced AI characters to have their own personalities that you remember. So when Sneaky Pete is there, you know what Sneaky Pete's going to do. And you hate Sneaky Pete because he does that thing that you don't like. The sapping fiend.
Yeah.
And there's that kind of sense of you start a game and there are these enemies that you recognize and you feel you have this relationship with as well. Mm. And that all kind of smells of the Nemesis system in a way to me.
A little bit, maybe. I mean, definitely they need to bring in new features and big new features. Otherwise, you're just playing the same game from 2004. And I think some of those might not work out, but they're interesting to explore. And I agree with you guys. I think they might not know exactly how the war fronts are going to work out yet. They seem to have more of a grasp of the island expeditions than the war fronts.
And they sound cool.
Nailing what PvP should be in World of Warcraft has constantly been a back and forth, swinging the pendulum one way or the other, trying to see what sticks and works. And I'm not sure they've ever really found the best thing. There are certainly people who love whatever it is. Winter Grasp was amazing for a lot of people. Some people didn't get it. Some people love World PvP. I think they're addressing that interestingly with this update as well, which you haven't talked about yet. But PvP continues to be that weird target, and they're always aim, and sometimes they take a shot, and they go, okay, let's see how this goes. Doesn't work out so well.
That sounds like me in PvP.
It sounds like me in life, honestly. But I'm really glad they're doing that. It's like this constant thing in the back of their heads. They're like, guys, we come from this. We need to be this for some people or else the legacy is lost in a way. And that is, not to go back to fanboyism, but that's one of the things I love about this company. We never left. But they've never let go of those, what they value, and all the money in the world doesn't seem to have changed that. They still want to do it right. And I don't know how you copy that. I don't know how you chase that. But I hope this is the PvP we've all been waiting for. And if it's not, I'm fully confident they'll keep trying until they figure it out.
All right, let's move on. Again, I could talk about PvP for a long time. We have the new continents. Basically, Horde and Alliance are going to be leveling from 110 to 120 in different continents, and then you can explore both. But so that keeps having the all of the features are informed by the conflict, and they look amazing. Like it really felt like they had something that happened that made this look even better than it did before. It was great in Legion already, but the Alliance zones especially, I turned to Scott and I was like, this is almost Pixar level. Like, it looks like something that they could, that I'm sure they could do it better if they had unlimited power resources, but it looks like something that they would do if corresponds to their image of what they would like it to look like. Exactly. There's the allied races. There's the Heart of Azeroth, which is essentially a new artifact thing, which is unique. Like, everyone has the same one, and it allows for other items to have special powers. So, well, we're not going to get into that, but if there's one feature you have to pick out as the one you want to play the most, or I don't know.
For me, I thought that the actual feature set was kind of smaller than other expansions. Maybe Warfronts will become this gigantic thing, but like everyone was saying, it kind of didn't seem very... It seemed very nebulous right now. But for me, I think that Allied Races seems like a cool idea that they can continually expand on. I hope that they add more Allied Races, like, before even the game comes out, as more options and stuff like that, as they just come up with ideas and stuff like that.
So just to explain, allied races are basically different races you can go and recruit throughout your leveling experience. And you can then, once you've completed the quest, create a new character that will be level 20 and that can level through the world, which is now, by the way, sectioned off in like 20 level or 30 or 40 level chunks, where the leveling, how do you call it?
The
leveling scales, right. And yeah, so they have races like the Nightborn Elves, the Lightforged Jernais, the Void Elves, the Zendalari Trolls that are going to join the different, the two factions.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed that we weren't just going to be able to like potentially race change our current characters.
Well, you can once you've unlocked the thing. You don't have to go from 20
to
120.
But you won't get the cool heritage armor set.
Right.
If you level them from 20, you get this awesome transmog.
Yeah,
that's your prize.
Yeah. No, that's great. But by race change, I mean for free.
I
feel like that with my sub as well. I like it. It's fine, but I like it more. Yeah.
All right. Any other thing from WoW?
Thing real quick. It's all about level scaling, and that's it.
Okay, level scaling. So you're gonna go.
I love everything, and I'm stoked. And it has to do with these allied races, obviously. But to go back and make old content refresh again, like make it a useful thing in the game again, and have it be rewarding. Completely down with it. I'd love it. I want to go to Pandaria again. I'm ready. Let's go.
And go ahead.
No, just one last quick thing about the allied races. We just did a demo with the Lightforged Draenei, and I have to say they have the most magnificent beards. And this is a game with Prophet Velen in it, but they have the greatest beards.
The best beards this side of the Instance podcast. They're good. They're good.
And the dynamic leveling thing, they're doing something interesting where they're clumping together like two expansions. So when you reach level 60, you can choose to go in Outland or Northrend, and that will take you from 60 to 80. You can switch between the two and go wherever you want, whatever zone you want, but it's still in that 60 to 80, you're going to be there. It's not like you can do from, I don't know, 1 or 20 to 100 in one section. So you still have that feeling of progression.
And I don't know how much we're doing it justice, but like right now, and they mentioned this during the thing, is when you're leveling up 1 to 60, basically the only way to actually truly level up is just to run dungeons over and over again, because if you try to quest, you're going to run out of your questing zone before you get to anywhere close to the end. And so their solution to this is just like the level scaling of Legion across every single zone in a way that allows you to just continually quest through a particular continent area or whatever until you decide to leave. But also, they want to keep like Eastern Plaguelands as being like the scary place that you're not supposed to go to as a level 1. So they're making sure it's like starts at level 40 for Eastern Plaguelands, which I'm so glad that they did that, because I was so nervous that by them scaling up all these zones, and that's the other thing, is that there's a max too. So if I'm going back as a level 120 in Elwynn Forest and I fight a bear, I shouldn't be scared of that bear because it's a level 1 bear when I first fought him, you know?
So basically, leveling is going to look like Elwynn Forest, Redridge, Northrend, Pandaria, done.
Yeah.
Ready to raid.
Yeah, yeah.
Or swap out Pandaria for Outland, whatever. Like whatever you like, you can go do. But it's an elegant solution. ESO has this with their One Tamriel update, and it's nice. And it made that game really relevant to me again. Played the heck out of it. I love the idea of doing that. But it does diminish this thing where I'll never out-level anything. So Blizzard's found a nice middle ground where if I accomplish what I need to in that zone, then when I go back there later with that character, I can feel powerful. And I think that's important. I think they know that. So they've done kind of a hybrid here that really works for me.
Because they can. They've got the depth of content
exactly
that ESO doesn't have. They've got, you know.
Yeah. All right.
Your favorite thing. Did they say?
Well, I haven't played WoW since Wrath of the Lich King, so it's been a minute.
You are the target audience.
But I was about to say, one of my gripes when playing back then, especially with the next few expansions, was that a lot of the previous leveling areas feel very negligible, right? Like you had no reason to ever go back there and just feel like this vast, empty continent with one populated area. So that's really nice to do anything. And another thing that I like is bringing back the trolls. I love all of the troll artwork and like all of those designs. I love the new continent that they're doing.
Yeah. And they have dinosaurs.
Zombie dinosaurs.
Zombie dinosaurs.
They have trolls that can stand upright. So let's do this.
All right, let's move on to Overwatch. The Omnics over here have been very silent. We had a bunch of things announced for Overwatch. The Reinhardt short, which again captured my heart. The Moira, who's a new character, she's a healer. And we had the new Blizzard World map, which is a hybrid map. And that was like fan service central.
Really quickly, was I the only person who thought that Blizzard World was real for a second?
Yeah, no. Yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah, okay. Hands down, I literally went.
I just knew that it wouldn't be Kaplan. It'd have to be
right.
You know, all the main guys, and so I had cognitive dissonance. I was like, "Are they
exactly.
going to? What are they? Oh my gosh!" And I think the audience too was like, "Oh."
Yeah.
And I thought maybe it'd be like a part of Disneyland, or they had a deal with Universal or something.
Yeah, some
like I was expecting.
Part.
My brain was going, and then I went, "Oh, they're doing a map. All right,
good to know. I'm not the only
it's
one."
An Overwatch announcement in the Overwatch stage. Let's calm
even
down,
after,
people.
Even after the they started to show the map. Like on the screen, my friend was still confused. Like, he's like, "What is this? Are they going to do a thing?" And I turned, and I was like, "They're doing a map." And he's like, "Oh."
It was a bit confusing, but well, since we're on the map, let's tell a little bit more about it. It's basically a theme park within the game that is dedicated to the games that Blizzard, the company within the world of Overwatch, has developed. But that company within the world of Overwatch has not developed the game Overwatch. So there's only StarCraft, Warcraft, but Diablo.
Titan is massive for that company.
Oh, right,
the game.
Right.
Yeah, it's raking so it in. They can't, yeah.
And there's so much fan service in this. There's like, I mean, I don't know if you saw, but some of, like, the restaurant is called Snacks Ramus. And
they sell death wings.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. It's amazing. And the, it, and there's it gives them the opportunity to bring in the characters from those games in the world of Overwatch, realistically, quote unquote. And so we're going to have skins that are Blizzard games themed for Overwatch characters. So you have Butcher Roadhog, you have Nova Widowmaker, Black Hand Doomfist. Like, it's a bunch of...
There's a
really
StarCraft
cool
Orisa that looks over 9,000.
Nova I couldn't help but think that the Black Hand Doomfist was just a little on the nose. Just a little bit.
So yeah, that map looked really good. What did you think of the healer?
As the Moira support main, I will be taking the helm on this one, Andre. Sorry. Moira is, at first glance, talking with a few guys, slightly underwhelming, but also very intricate. She's very complex. She's not easy to play. She's easy to have fun with, which is important. And not easy to understand is the only difficult thing I have with it. She's not very approachable to new players. But I think what you're going to be seeing is, with the launch of Overwatch League and adding this new piece to the puzzle, is going to invert a lot of brand new compositions and team strategies. And one thing that I was hoping to see yesterday that United States did, which was they pulled out a triple support at one point. And I was like, but no, he was just choosing Lucio to speed him to the choke and then pull out. So, but I think Moira is very dynamic in that way.
I felt like it was two things. One, it seemed like a direct hard counter to all the Reinhardt Orisa like gameplay that we've seen recently with her ultimate, but I actually felt like as soon as I started playing her, it was very intuitive immediately. Your choice of left click or right click to heal or do damage, I pretty much got it right away. And then when you used your E ability, it allowed you to kind of it throws a ball like towards the enemy or towards your players, and if you're just running along with the ball, you can get healed up. So that's pretty much the only way you can self heal if you're not using your ult. And then her blink or her like teleport away or whatever fade is like the most OP thing I've ever used, I think, because I got hooked by a Roadhog. And I just turned around real quick and faded away. No damage taken, mm-hmm. You know? But I was able to do a good amount of damage. Me and my friend, we did double Moria because that's the strategy at BlizzCon. So we did double Moria, and the first round he got like 5 medals, 2 of which were gold. And the second round I got like 3 or 4 medals, 2 of which are gold. So it seems pretty easy to pick up.
So the interesting thing with her, as you mentioned, she has a healing meter that depletes when she's healing, and in order to replenish it, she has to do damage. So she has the left click, which is essentially maze ice spray, like mechanically, and that heals. And then she has the right click, which does damage in the same way that Symmetra's beam does. Yeah, no ramping, but it's that thing. She has the ball that she sends out that can rebound everywhere, ricochet everywhere, and that sends out like healing or damaging tendril, depending on the one you send. And that fade where you... Yeah, of course. You can send two. And the fade, she basically disappears for a second, gains 500% speed boost. But it's just a second. But she's like untargetable. She's just not in the game anymore. And she can control it. So it's not quite a blink. It's not like Tracer or Genji.
It's like Reaper's Wraith or Teleport.
Yeah,
but on steroids.
But super, super fast. And so you can be walking in one direction, see that there's someone shooting at you, just fade, turn around, go around a corner, and they will never know where you are. So that's and then her ultimate is this. Any Dragon Ball fans here?
Yeah.
There you go. There's one. And that's a total
Piccolo beam cannon.
Yeah, or Kamehameha, or
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like it heals and damages everything in its path. Scott is like barfing right here. And it feels like so powerful, and she can move around. So anyway, so did you get a chance to try her, Andres?
Yeah, I really like Mora. One of the things that I like the most about her is her kind of backstory and her attitude. I love like the whole kind of like
mad scientist
glam kind of.
Oh yeah.
Ambiguous sexuality, like kind of like that style, and her desire to like pursue science like that, like genetic kind of madman kind of like vibe that she has to it, joining the bad guys, not because she's a villain, but because she just wants to accomplish her goals, pursue all that stuff.
She feels like a villain a little bit. I mean,
she's
some people...
Like, yeah. She's villainous, yeah. She's willing to, you know, do shady things to accomplish her goals. And her kid represents that too, you know what I mean? Having like that heal and damage. And she feels like amalgamation of different characters, like Orisa, Reaper... you got Symmetra and you got Mei, kind of like all thrown into one with slightly little tweaks. She's a very fun hero. She's very different from all the other healers as well. Her playstyle is very upfront, is very aggressive in a sense. You want to be right next to your teammates. You want to be kind of like in their face because your main heal has a very short range. And it's not very effective if you're not like next
right
to
there,
them.
Yeah.
Yeah, and on top of that, you have to kind of like keep it on them. So it requires like a certain level of skill to like be able to perform with her.
And the other thing is, once your healing meter is empty, it takes forever to recharge. So if you're not playing well and choosing when to heal, you're just like, when it's empty, you're not healing.
Yeah.
So your teammates are gonna die until you actually do damage. So she's gonna be tricky.
Well, the
to play.
Heal does recharge very slowly.
Yeah,
on its
super
own.
Slowly.
But I feel like she's more of a symbiotic hero, and we haven't really seen that yet. Like, there are support heroes you kind of feel like you have to babysit, unless you're really good, like Zen players, like Rakus dumping on Tracer yesterday, which is crazy. But Moira is very dependent on somebody else, but in the same light, she's also very helpful, and like other heroes can be very dependent on her. So you're able to really delineate kind of the pairing of the support stick together type mentality when you're playing Overwatch. You can play Zenyatta with her and you can heal each other. You don't have to use that heal like you're mentioning on your own by yourself, and you can, you know, support the supports with some damage. You can do everything. You can get out of the trouble by yourself if you need to. You're not really dependent to escape, which is
right.
Extremely important playing your own support.
Mm. So this is probably... She's probably going to be available on PTR. I mean, they said very soon, and usually that means next Tuesday. So the Blizzard World map should be live early 2018, but I'm guessing it seemed ready. So I'm guessing it's going to be arriving fairly soon on the PTR. And then we had the Reinhardt short, which showcased his indeed incredible, fabulous hair, which was I'm sure, you know, Taliesin, you were absolutely amazed by.
As you can see, I've modeled myself on it today. or did they model it on me? Who knows?
It doesn't matter. I mean, it's just, yeah. But so there was this, again, bringing depth and texture to the character, because you know that he's a little bit goofy. You know what his ideals are, the chivalry and all of this, and he was a crusader. But then, and we've been playing in the Eichenwald map, and that short shows what happened during that battle, and his mentor, who was telling him what to do, and he was like, whatever, I'm young, I'm going to go be an idiot. And like, he's still a soldier and powerful, but then his mentor dies and sits on that throne that we've been seeing forever, and you understand the gravity that is, you know, on the back of his mind somewhere always for Reinhardt. That makes the character so much more complex. Not complex, but like tragic, deep. I don't know what the word is. But
I know this is probably just me, so it's okay if no one else thought of this. All I can think about is, dude, freaking dispose of the body like normal. It's just going to sit there. It's going to smell bad. Yeah. It's going to start stinking. Like, I understand that there's poetry to it. But when I realized, oh, they never moved him.
He's about 12 foot tall and made of metal.
Yeah,
that's true. You move it.
But in there's like if somebody, that's a good point. But if somebody bumps it now, like an arm thing's going to pop off, and out, like some kind of primordial human goo flesh is going to fall out. Like, I'm not into it. But I really, 100% on everything you said, that's an amazing thing. I loved it. It was awesome.
I love that about the Overwatch storytelling as well. There's been talk recently about the depth or not of Overwatch storytelling, but I love how most other games, if they'd done that, we would have got that cinematic before we got that map.
Exactly, yeah.
And I like that we got the map last year, and we've had time to get to know it and to wonder what that story was, and then we can go back and say Brechtian, you know.
It's a completely different experience, because you experience the map first, and then you understand why. So in your mind, when you see the short, you're like, oh, that's what it is, and that's how it went. And so it has a lot more impact on you when you've been through all of this. All right, so Overwatch, cool as always. Hearthstone. Again, I'm going to turn to you guys. Who plays Hearthstone regularly among... No, she doesn't. Okay.
I had to stop because Hearthstone is the one game that makes me rage.
Oh, really?
Like, yeah.
Hearthstone?
Yeah. Yes, well, I know.
You say the one game. We live together. Called I've out. Seen it.
Yeah, it is the one game that literally makes me want to throw my laptop device across the room.
You know what? Maybe with this new expansion called Kobolds and Catacombs, which, you know, standard expansion, you're going to have 100 and whatever how many cards, and you're going to have a new keyword. There was this really funny bit with Ben Brode, who was doing this role-playing thing where he was a dungeon master for the whole room and telling them there's this part where you have like this path, you have a door with a gold glimmer coming out, and or the other part where there's a tunnel with goo and ominous sounds, and the whole room was like, we go to the tunnel, and you're like, what are you doing? All right, you're all dead. The other people, what do you want to do? And that
many
was really
things
funny.
I was expecting from BlizzCon. One thing I would never expected was an entire arena of people chanting the word death, 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 quite so gleefully.
So there's all of that. We're going to get a legendary card, Merrin the Fox, that's going to be available very soon. And the expansion itself comes out in December. And we have legendary weapons, a bunch of stuff that are really cool. And the new dungeon runs, which are, I mean... You can talk about the expansion itself, but the dungeon ones are what kind of piqued my interest, because as people might know, I've played Hearthstone nonstop for like a year and a half. It was my life. And then I stopped playing. And the dungeon ones are randomized bosses, but also you only have 10 cards at the beginning and you gain cards, and it's like a roguelike where you come back, and when you die, you keep the cards you've earned and you do it again to keep progressing. Like, that seems like a really interesting feature.
Yeah, I actually am a personal big fan of that feature, not only for myself, but for my girlfriend. Like, people like her, I think, are going to benefit from this feature quite a bit, because she's the kind of person that loves the game of Hearthstone, but she cares for, she doesn't care at all for the competitive side, and she would never touch it. Like, she would never build a pre-made deck and go into the ladder and do all these things. So she ends up playing Arena, which is the only other mode in that game that allows her to not have a full collection and still enjoy the game on equal terms as the other people. And I think that this new mode is amazing for people like her, because then she gets to enjoy just playing the game, enjoying the features, and feeling like you have a really cool deck that you can build through the run, but you never have to worry about, oh, I have to go with the meta, because if not, all these people are going to beat my ass, kind of stuff like that.
And it's PvE, so there's not the same amount of stress
and low pressure,
and maybe rage that some people around the table experience playing. And you also have, like, you start with 10 cards. That's really smart, because 10 cards is so much... What's the opposite of unwieldy? Is it wieldy? Like, it's so much
nimble.
Nimble, I guess. It's so wieldy. The 10 cards are wieldy, manageable, and to understand for someone who's not as much into the game. So it feels like a pretty clever feature. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah,
I'm going back into this game based on this mode alone. Do you think that's... In your opinion, you guys teach this stuff through your shows. You're like looking at the more deep strategies and how to play this thing and how to build your decks. You think a guy like me that was like, CCGs just don't do it for me. I'm more of a complete freak about roguelikes. I love them of all kinds. I buy them on Steam without thinking about it. So when I saw that and heard that, I went, this is my way back to Hearthstone in a way that is huge. Or is this just a gimmick mode? I'd love to know what you guys think.
I think the replayability can't be a gimmick. Because if that's the primary feature to draw you in beyond the gameplay itself, then it's drawing anyone in. Because then you're going to have a unique experience regardless if you're playing the same boss over and over again, because you're going to be able to encounter it with different cards. And you can't just build a single deck, run it against the wall, and say, I can't figure this out, so I'm going to craft something new. Because you're given a random pack at a time, and you're getting multi-random packs when you get up to the 10th boss. So, and I was playing this a lot today. I actually sat next to Jocelyn Mosset,
we
were working through this upstairs.
Is that mode available?
In the arena, yes.
Oh, I didn't realize.
So
damn it.
Right now at the...
Was
the,
Jocelyn rating?
No.
Oh.
We were kind of enjoying it together, and we're like, okay, so... Where are the Easter eggs? Let me click all the things. That's what we were doing. But yeah, she's like, ooh, this card back is shiny. You know, the typical Jocelyn approach to card backs, which I'm sure she'd appreciate. But we were really trying to like think, oh, I haven't seen that boss yet. What does he do? And like, we're just writing down notes. But they have warrior, priest, and mage available, and you can only do up through 3 rounds. The consistent thing right now is the first boss is always a whelp, and it's 10 health. So you
that
don't.
Seems,
it's
that
very
seems
approachable
manageable.
For a new. It's, easy, yeah. It's extremely easy. Like, you just hit it in the face a bunch of times, ignore what's actually happening, and you're done. And it's fun, which is funny because its hero power is actually pretty busted. It's just shadow formed. Like, deal 2 damage for 2 mana. But like the features that Scott was bringing up is, I think, what we were hoping for. Because what happens is you have people that rage on the regular that love the game and that hate the game. And it's a consistent approach that happens when you encounter consistent issues with a game mode that you can't always win. Like, the game needs to be balanced. You can't always win. And this is a game mode where if you're really good, you're really smart, and you're also enjoying the game, you don't have to. And you can also, you can if you want to. You can just win every time because you're smart enough to. And you don't even have to be that smart. It's very approachable.
I was doing the Icy Vein podcast earlier in the day, and Lorinda on that show was telling me, I love the game. I love playing it, but sometimes I'm arenaed out or I'm ranked out, and I just want to keep playing, but I don't want to mess up my MMR. And that mode is going to be great for him because that's the relaxed Hearthstone experience. And same if you're in public transport and you don't want to play a ranked mode because you don't want to mess up, you can play that. And if you lose, it's not the end of the world.
I was going to say the really cool thing about this mode is that it allows you to be very creative. I feel like when you jump into the ladder of a Hearthstone, you're kind of a little bit limited in the amount of things that you can try. Like, sure, you can build a crazy priest deck with some gimmick or something like that, but when you bring it into the ladder and you lose like 7 games in a row, there's like this motivation factor. You start kind of like losing the interest in playing the deck, and you're like, man, I really want to be creative with this, but I can pull it off. And this game mode allows you to do these things because you can get really creative with the decks, and then a lot of them work, especially because they've added all these new cards that are, as Jeff Kaplan would say, OPAF. And it makes it really fun, like playing with those things, just building a completely different deck that you would never be able to build on the ladder and experience it.
So they're different cards from the actual, like they're specifically designed for this mode?
To give you an example of one, I think they showcased one in the main stage. It was the, what's the name of the card? The Pyroclasm or something like that? It's a 10 mana card that when you play it, it casts random Pyroblast, which deals 10 damage to any hero, ends at random, and it only stops after one hero is dead.
I think I saw another card come up that's literally destroy your opponent's deck.
Yeah. That's actually that's actually a playable card.
Wow, really?
So it's really complex. I was reading this morning describing to Andres. I was like, wait, say that again? Basically, it's a warlock, 6 mana, 3/6 with taunt. And it's, which is already bad, and then you get a card that's 5 mana out of it, and it's a seal, and there's 5 seals. So the seals will summon a 2/2, and then put the next seal in your hand, which is really bad. So it goes 2/2, 3/3, 4/4, 5/5, and then when you play the last one, you get a 10 mana, 10/10, destroy your opponent's deck.
So basically, you're already, like, just even to get that, you have 5...
It's 31
rounds.
Mana to pull it off.
Right, okay.
So it's actually really bad.
Okay.
Because unless the card says, after investing 31 mana into an entire sequence, win the game, it's not worth it.
Yeah.
So, but there is some other really cool card in the arena area that I was just like, this is the best card ever. Sorry.
He's really excited.
I'm super freaking excited. It's called Wish. 10 mana. Fill your board with legendaries. Heal to full health.
Okay, nice. You know what? These cards don't sound like they're going to solve my rage issues with Hearthstone. Like, seriously, because like
7 Blood Mage Thanos, go.
But I think when you have like this kind of new format of playing the game, like that's fine when you don't lose your rank or you
exactly.
don't.
Exactly.
Like, and that actually sounds like something that I might come back to, because if I'm not like losing my time and money and mental health to like to this game, then I could go for it. I think I might come back for that one.
And that's the one thing, like all these OP cards are, you're playing against the AI, right? You're not playing them against another person, because if you play it against another person, that's like chair flipping kind of event.
It's chair flipping, table flipping, mic flipping, people flipping. Like, so before we move on to heroes, the expansion itself, not this new mode, which is going to be available for everyone, of course. What do you guys think about the expansion? Is there anything notable about it, like the legendary weapons, or like what would you? Well, you're the Hearthstone experts, so.
Well, expert is a very loose term in this context.
Well, you do a podcast about the game, so in my book, that qualifies you as an expert.
I have the experts with me. I just tell them what to talk about. But yeah, I think that right now we, like anything, there's a drip feed. The cards come slow. It's really hard to evaluate a card in a vacuum. You run through the vanilla test and it's good, and then you get all the other cards and you're like, wow, that's trash. But what you have to remember with Hearthstone is that these cards are going to be going into 2 venues, and now we have a third that you can evaluate these cards, because you're going to be seeing these with that new mode that Scott brought up. And additionally, I think the last thing about the event that was really cool, we haven't mentioned yet, there's 27 exclusive arena cards that are coming.
Oh, okay.
And I haven't seen any of them. I saw a bunch of tweets blowing up my phone while I'm trying to test this thing, and they're all coming from Hearthbone, but they're really cool. Scott, did you see them?
I saw something on one of the panels. I was in the press area. They were saying that the audience was helping choose the first 9
yes,
or something.
Yes, that's correct. They're like voting or something.
Right. So out of BlizzCon will come whatever the first 9
the
of those cards
revealed,
are. That's crazy. Yeah.
It
that's
sounds
really, cool.
really intriguing.
It's just arena exclusive cards
that you can't get in packs, and you can't even get in the new mode. But it's the whole thing just is super exciting. I even happened to randomly see Ben Bro just walking by before this event, and he said, "This is going to be the best BlizzCon for Hearthstone," and I couldn't be more on board. And I thought you couldn't beat League of Explorers and Knights of the Frozen Throne were like my favorite 2 expansions so far, and Old Gods is a close 3rd. But man, this one, going out in left field, using the Warcraft lore a little bit, very loosely, and then just diving into all of this new stuff is just incredible. It's going to pull people in so many different directions to try new things. It's great.
Cool. Yeah, and kobolds are going to protect their candles, so everyone's happy. Heroes. We had a couple of interesting announcements for Heroes. First of all, the new Heroes, Alexstrasza and Hanzo. It was basically dragon versus dragon. The interesting thing with Alexstrasza is that she is an actual dragon, not like Chromie, who's never in dragon form. She actually transforms into a dragon in the game, and you control the dragon on the board. And Hanzo is Hanzo, and he plays... I say this for every podcast I do. Basically, you run around on your own, try to shoot four people alone, you die, and rinse and repeat. That's how Hanzos are played. Scott disagrees.
I don't disagree. He's just... I mean, he's a ranged assassin. He's going to be great at poke. He's going to be great at, like, all right, too many people are on that. Too many opposing players are hanging around the objective we need, and I need to hold them off until my backup gets here. So he's going to be great about kind of keeping them on their toes. He doesn't have, like, incredible range. Like, Chromie's got better range than him, but it's pretty good. And he's not sniping people to death. He's just poke damage. And it's good. I think he's going to be great in the game, and I didn't get a chance to play him yet, but I was very impressed with what I saw. Alexstrasza, on the other hand, is a very strange support character. She heals. She is, after all, the Lifebringer. She lives up to that. She seems awesome. So, again, haven't played her either, but I'm excited about an actual dragon on there. I can't stand Chromie. Get her out of there. Let's get a real dragon in there. But both looks seem like good additions to the thing. I'm a little sad we didn't hear about a new battleground. There's a hinted one in the cinematic they showed that also, I don't know, it's hard to say whether that was a hint or that was just, hey, look at the cool Nexus portals. I don't know, but I'm really into Heroes right now, and I think the game is that it's best it's ever been. They're really killing it, and these seem like fine additions to the roster, but it's not the biggest Heroes update event ever. HCC is a bigger deal this year.
And I mean, there is also, you mentioned Heroes 2.0, or did you? In my head you did. So and they're talking about the 2018 gameplay update, which is going to change a bunch of stuff. There's like differences for the for stealth, for laning. There's the performance based matchmaking. But can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So we had an interview with Claudio. Forgot his last name. Oh, there goes Patrick.
I'll be right back.
Are you peeing or what? He's literally peeing while I'm recording a show. You guys, we can do some serious damage right now.
We can say anything we want.
All right, I'll stay on topic. So the laning stuff's very interesting, because one of the big complaints we had coming into this con was there has been an uptick in some cheese play by characters like Asmodan and Murky and other characters who go bot, let the other four go fight up top, and it's always been a strategy, but it's to the point now where they're just wiping out defenses so quickly that you 90% of the time will lose that map if they get the first keep. The stats are just there, and it sucks. So for people who are playing that cheese play, it's really frustrating. You do what you can to counter it. If you have a coordinated team, it's different, but when you're playing quick play, which is the most viable mode, you need to have that be a better experience. So one of the things they're doing is they're taking ammo restrictions away from all towers.
Oh.
So there's no more running out of ammo. And that's what would happen. It would run out, and then Asmodan would just have free reign. His minions are slamming into the gate. There's no resistance, especially after his quest where he's now super powerful.
I always thought it was really weird that the towers had ammo for an MMO.
Yeah. And they loved that. That was a thing. He told us, he says, in the initial stages of the game when they launched it, they loved that at that addition because it did create this like on and off scenario. Oh, they're off. Let's do a thing. Oh, they're on. We need to be careful. Like, they liked it as a construct, but it didn't pay off. Mm-hmm. And they have removed that completely, so nothing has ammo anymore. Also, the secondary towers that are like those little, just like the little extra extemporaneous tower that isn't tied to a gate.
Yeah.
Those are gone. So you don't have to kill those. And the reason for that is we just mow over them. If you're that far in, you're just, there's like nothing. It may as well not be there. So they're kind of a waste. On the other hand, so losing that seems like a nerf, but having ammo that doesn't end is a bit of a buff. It's going to stop that kind of lane cheese, And it is a real, it's a real game changer, or as I like to say, a real lane changer. And then the other thing, and then the dad jokes on point. My kids aren't even here to hear them, or maybe they are. Anyway, and then the other thing was, I'll just quickly speak to stealth. Stealth changes are basically, it's much easier to see a stealth character. I hate stealth in games, most games, not all games, that are multiplayer games. I love stealth in a single player context with, like, you know, Splinter Cell, those kind of games are great. Assassin's Creed, whatever. But I don't like it in multiplayer games. It's a pain. It seems cheap. I don't like
Overwatch
it.
Overwatch does it well.
Overwatch does do it well. If anything, this
there's
is
only
them.
One.
Yeah, there's only one. Well, one. Yeah, that's true. But this game's got a few, and they're kind of cheese picks. And you don't see them in pro play either. And they'd like to see these characters in pro play because they do offer other things besides being stealth. So to help curb that, they will be way more seeable. They're still invisible, but it's way more obvious who they are. Now you'd think, well, that's dumb. Then what's the point of stealthing? Well, the point of stealthing is if you're still playing smartly, you're hiding in bushes, you're doing more outer play, Nova, Zeratul, these others have way more powerful hits inside of stealth than they would out of stealth. They have advantages. I can list them all, but there are advantages across the board when they're stealth that make them way more powerful characters. They've also been buffed greatly.
That's good
characters.
To hear, because I like Zeratul is the first character I identified with, and he's like one of my favorite heroes. But
he's
I can't play him anymore.
Exactly.
So either you're playing Probius because cheese it's cheese.
Exactly. Probius is in trouble with this new lane thing.
He's my
anyway.
Favorite hero. Sorry.
He's pretty great. He's pretty great. But this change means that the other team isn't getting just cheaply hit all the time. On the other hand, there's a risk-reward for the stealthers themselves. If they can be good stealthers, they get real benefits. And if they don't, they get out of stealth and they're vulnerable. Towers also now reveal stealth in range.
That should have been in place.
Should have been there the whole time, in my opinion. Exactly. And there have been some nice stealth reveals, and it's good picks for certain characters. But I think this is a good thing. So it's a real give and take of nerf and buff here. But I feel really good about that. And also the performance-based ranking stuff, or performance-based matchmaking, is a huge deal. The game needs it. I personally predict I will go from silver to gold, possibly diamond very quickly.
We'll see. We'll
explain
see.
Explain what it is. Explain.
All right. So the way it works is, and I'm not going to be very good at explaining this.
Well,
cause
I can do it.
You want to explain it? You probably know the math.
It's very much like Overwatch, to be honest.
Exactly, yeah. Basically, the way ranking is being calculated in Heroes now is based on your wins and losses. And your performance doesn't matter. You win, you go up. You lose, you go down a certain amount. And that's it. The way they're going to be doing it now is more akin to what Overwatch does, which means they're going to be looking at how well you perform in that match according, you know, to your role. And if you do well, you'll go up more. And if you do well but you lose, you'll go down less, and vice versa. More or less. Is there more to it than this? Or
I mean, the performance thing is the one thing that's like how you're doing is going to be the performance is going to be nuanced per hero, which is a big trick.
Right. No, that's what I mean. That's what I mean. Yeah. It's like a per hero basis, which a lot of people who think they're stuck in MMR hell are saying, oh, well, then that'll be great. That's how I'm going to get out of my. And I think a lot of people are not going to be moving so much and going to realize that that is actually their rank because they've been playing for 2 years. And if they were stuck in MMR, I mean, even with MMR hell, after such a long amount of time, you still manage to climb, or, you know, if you're really good.
Right, it doesn't change the win rate. That's
right,
the key
exactly.
thing. Your win rates are going to kind of stay the same level, but you're going to be losing less rank when you're just dumping on the other team and still losing. Mm. Like, for example, I'm really good at Probius, but if Probius goes out of the meta and it's just what I want to play, and I'm in ranked, and people are mad, and I'm doing well, I'm not going to lose as much rank.
In essence, you get to play who you want to play still.
Right, right.
And get benefit. It will benefit you less to be punished. Playing well, less punished. And the other real key here is that it's half the time. They showed, so the example they used on stage, and they said they don't encourage this on individual behavior, but that for whatever reason, that was their example. They had a Smurf Grandmaster take over an older bronze account that just never seemed to get anywhere. Took that account. Normally would have taken them 250 games to get them back to Grandmaster.
100
took
games
them a
left.
Half.
It's crazy that you could do that in half. So, see you in Diamond.
Well, I won't be in Diamond.
I'm in Platt, so I'll see you
might
when you
be,
come
but I certainly won't. But the thing is, on in Overwatch, it works like this already, and I'm still in gold. I mean, I think I should be at least Platt. I'm still in gold, and I mean, I don't know. Maybe you'll benefit from it, and you will climb, and then I'll be jealous and super angry. But we'll see how it goes.
We can only hope.
All right, I think that's about it. There was a bunch of things with social features being integrated in World of Warcraft, like the voice Blizzard voice is being integrated into WoW and Heroes. There's communities in WoW, basically like kind of channels, groups that you're going to be able to join multiple of. Bunch of stuff. Nothing on Diablo. StarCraft 2 is going free to play in November. So that's... There's a new commander, that's true. So that's cool, but I think if you're not playing StarCraft 2, you're not going to start playing all of a sudden. I mean, we all have it, right? Yeah. Yeah, so exactly. What's happening live?
I'm getting messages from some of our moderators that there are Overwatch League announcements coming to the Mythic stage here shortly.
And you don't know what the announcements are.
That's because they haven't given them yet.
France has been kicked out.
Well, France managed to beat China, and not in the Overwatch League.
Yeah,
in
South Korea won the whole thing while we were recording this. Yeah. In case you're wanting more spoilers.
So F the French.
What? Why?
I don't know.
Oh, okay, yeah. That
French the French?
I've heard it like that.
For the Overwatch World Cup, France... managed to beat China, but lost to Korea, and then Korea beat Canada to win the Overwatch World Cup. But at least we didn't lose to China, which was nice. The U.S. lost to South Korea, which is
that
not very surprising.
That was the finals, by the way.
That what?
No, I'm just kidding.
As far as skill level,
that's the match you don't want to miss.
Yeah, exactly.
It felt like that should have been the finals.
Yeah,
I just want to sneak this in. I'm super proud of the U.S. team. Yeah. They really made us proud. Even though we lost against South Korea, they pulled their weight, and they really showed us that we can fight them back.
That
and
third match was crazy.
It was incredible.
Where they came to a draw or whatever. We were walking around going to dinner, and I just couldn't take my eyes off my phone watching the game. It was incredible.
That was amazing. Yeah. And it was over 300,000 people watching it on Twitch or something like that. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, almost 300,000. I mean, I will say that France did really well. I didn't see
the
matches, but really, I'm pretty sure they did. So, yeah, and you're confirming. So thank you for confirming my French bias. But this brings us maybe say a few words about esports and how much space and mindshare they're taking in the whole convention and for Blizzard in general, but it really shows here. And it's another thing that's getting kind of crazy. I guess, you know, some of you guys have spent a lot of time watching different esports, maybe Overwatch, maybe others, but it's getting kind of insane, right?
I just really enjoyed the fact that this year they moved. So last year they had the Overwatch arena kind of built up in that one corner, but this year they took up the entire arena, which last year was StarCraft. And so it's just great to see the growth that's happening for that game and how much of a mind share it's taken for esports across the entire world, and just the level of play that I was able to see. For all 8 teams, it didn't matter whether they made it to the finals or not. It was just great. I was amazed.
And there's this new viewer experience, which was, I thought, worked pretty well. So my friend Chris Chanman V was telling me there are issues here and there, and they're not used to it yet. But I thought like the colors make it so much more viewable for everyone. But
speaking as a WoW player, the Mythic Plus Invitational stuff this year has been like an epiphany moment. Really, it's like a light bulb that's just gone off over the entire player base's head. You know, it's sort of, this whole side of the player base has just been awoken to the concept of esports in a way that they just didn't have before. You know?
Were you a little bummed out that we didn't see that Mythic Dungeon Run stuff, competition stuff at this event? Like, I felt like it could have been made more of.
I would have made more of an effort to watch it. Yeah, certainly.
Yeah.
All right. I think that is going to be it for this episode. Thank you very much, guys, for showing up. and for sharing your passion for the world of Blizzard. Before we leave, please let us know how we can get a hold of you on the internet.
I like why. Why is good. I can't tell you why, but I can't tell you where. Go to frogpants.com or Scott Johnson on Twitter. You'll find everything I'm doing between those two sources. And I've got all kinds of shows over there. Patrick and I do a show called The Instance every Friday. Sometimes alone, sometimes with other people. It's always a little bit of a guess who's going to be on every Friday. But check that out. And if you're interested in Heroes of the Storm and more talk like that, I cannot recommend enough you check out the Core podcast at frogpants.com/core. And thanks for having me on.
You can follow me on Twitter at Adesis, and I stream Monday nights on 4pp.tv, and we stream every night over at 4pp.tv, and on Thursdays they record a podcast. Maybe one day I'll be able to get on there and join them. Maybe with some Patreon money.
do you want me to write you a note or like to tell them to send them an email? I can do something.
No, they know I'm good for it. They do their podcast live in Austin, Texas, and I do not live in Austin, Texas. So
that I can't review anything.
Yeah,
about.
Yeah. Unless you want to pay for my flights every week.
Sure.
Yeah.
Give me your bank account number, and you'll see that money real fast.
Yeah.
Well, if you guys want to watch some more stuff with Overwatch, we do a strategic podcast. This is focusing on the players, not so much the esports, but it will be coming. But we're going to be analyzing the esports in more of a strategic side than a news update style. It's called the Omnic Lab. You can find us at omniclab.com. And you can find all of our links at omniclab.com/links. You can find me with the inspirational Twitter that's come from your host, Patrick, called Not Rob instead of Not Patrick. It's very easy to find. I made it in 2009, so I got it right after I heard him for the first time. It was really funny. And then you can find Andres.
Yeah, you can personally find me on Twitter as well at iPlayGames. You spell that I-P-L-A-I Games. And you can also find my music blog over at soundcloud.com/iPlayMusic.
And we are Taliesin and Evertildu Games. You can find us on YouTube, Taliesin and Evertildu Games. On Twitter, we are Taliesin and Evertel. If you're looking for World of Warcraft content and, according to Patrick, humor. And probably the best way to find us, to be honest, is just to Google it. Because our URLs are a little tricky.
That's probably the best way to learn of our Warcraft news as well, to be honest with you. Don't watch the channel, just Google it. That's what our channel should be called. That's what we're going to call the weekly show.
Just Google it.
Why are you listening to this podcast? Just Google it.
I'll have the links to your Twitter accounts in the show notes, so you can find all of this there. I'm Not Patrick on Twitter and Facebook. I'm also available at frenchspin.com, where you'll have my shows and frenchspin.fr. Why did I call my website that? frenchspin.fr for the French versions and the French shows, and that's going to be it for us. Very quickly before we leave, favorite thing from this BlizzCon in like one word?
Cinematic.
Anduin.
Moira.
USA versus South Korea.
Beards.
Jaina, unrelated.
Oh, okay, excellent. I'd say cinematic as well. That thing was incredible. All right, thanks everyone. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks. Yay! Say something.
Test, test, test.
Testing, 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 testing.
Closer, closer.
Testing.
Testing, testing, testing.
Yeah. Drink in the microphone. Yeah.
Cool. So if I start doing like this or like just like it means closer.
All right. What's that? Do the hands down. No, do like this.
Oh, that's clever.
What is this?
I don't know, like...
I have the papers.
All right.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.